keep your hand on your gun.
All right, welcome back, folks.
Don't you trust
We're going to be joined
anyone.
By Brandon Weikert in this hour, help break down exactly what the hell is going on in the Middle East, what comes next, where this goes, what the goal even is. It's all retarded. So we'll break it down. One strange thing that's happened is apparently, allegedly, Benjamin Netanyahu, Prime Minister of Israel, may have fled Israel and is in Germany now. Regardless, his war cabinet, when convened, posted a picture that shows this. This is from Itai Epstein. In Israel's war cabinet, overseeing the offensive force against Iran, sits not only the Minister of Defense and the head of General Security Services, but Michael Eisenberg, the venture capitalist associated with the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation and the Board of Peace. When those who finance and engineer politicized aid architecture take a seat at the table of war, spare us the lectures on neutrality and impartiality. Humanitarian relief is not a branding exercise. It's governed by law. So supposedly, Michael Eisenberg is there in the war cabinet with Israel, helping to plan this stuff. Now, this immediately struck my interest, piqued my interest, because I know about Michael Eisenberg. I featured him in the Eighth Front War video that I made. He is the venture capitalist who's telling American Jews it's time to leave the declining empire of America and join him in Israel as part of the rising empire. Okay, so we now have this person who's an American, theoretically, technically, in the war cabinet with Israel, planning the war on Iran while simultaneously not just talking about moving to Israel and bringing, you know, the wealth of American Jews with them, but like actively doing that, like actively engaged in that already. So he's sitting there looting American, the American stock market, and getting his money out of American companies, sending them to Israel while simultaneously telling everybody, look, America is collapsing. Look, it's the money is leaving. You better come with us to Israel. Let's watch these clips. First, go to clip number. Let's just go to clip 4 and 5. Here's Michael Eisenberg, who apparently, allegedly, is sitting in the war cabinet with the war leadership of Israel, plotting our demise just as soon as we get done destroying Iran for them. Let's watch.
Beginning already in Q1, hedge funds get set up in Israel, so we become another capital of finance. I'll argue we will beat London within a short decade as a second capital of finance. It's going to be New York as a gateway to America, Hong Kong a gateway to China, Dubai a gateway to Southeast Asia, and Israel as a gateway to other parts of the world. And you can decide. You can stay here in New York in a declining empire, or you can come to Israel, which is part of the rising middle of the world, which is moving south and east. That's what I encourage you to do.
That's what I encourage you to do. Leave the declining empire, America, and come to the rising empire, Israel. That's what I'm encouraging everybody to do. And he goes on to say, that's what I did, right? That's what he did. So he's a billionaire. He's a venture capitalist. He's made billions and billions of dollars in America, and he's now taking all of that money, taking all of that investment clout, and taking it to Israel because he doesn't actually care about and is not loyal to America. And I want you to notice another thing. Let's play that one clip again. Let's play clip 4 again. Notice what he perceives as, you know, the coming power centers in the world and what they serve as gateways to. Okay, let's watch.
Beginning already in Q1, hedge funds get set up in Israel, so we become another capital of finance. I'll argue we will beat London within a short decade as a second capital of finance. It's going to be New York as a gateway to America, Hong Kong a gateway to China, Dubai a gateway to Southeast Asia, and Israel as a gateway to other parts of the world.
Okay, so what about Europe? What about Europe? He doesn't intend Europe to be a part of this coalition. Like, do you understand what he's saying? He says New York will be the gateway to America, whatever, you know, exists as America. I'm sure it will be flooded by tens of millions of refugees from the war that he and his friends are currently starting. But he says, you know, Dubai will be the gateway to Southeast Asia. Beijing will be the gateway to China. Israel will be gateway to Africa and the rest of the world. I guess Europe's just not a part of his calculation. Because I guess they're going to take down London. London's no longer going to be the center of finance, which once that goes, it's got absolutely nothing. So I guess that's the collapse there. So Europe will collapse. The rest of the world will rise. He's the one doing it, but he's also telling you to be prepared that this is happening while he's planning the war that's currently causing it all.
have the widest selection of Patriot apparel and some of the best designs. I shut out when our sponsor said, what do you want? I said, with the widest selection of t-shirts, hoodies, sweaters, hats, you name it. I want classic Americana stuff. I want pro-Trump stuff. I want InfoWars stuff. I want comedy stuff. Christian, Crusader, pro-life, pro-Jesus, classic 1776 stuff, quality Leering Center, you know, joke stuff, classic InfoWars gear. It's all there. I mean, just cool shirts saying, I love America with a German pointer on it. I mean, just good stuff. All sorts of resistance to tyrants is obedience to God Punisher shirts. I mean, there are some kick-ass stuff there. Look at that one, American Supply Co. I designed that bad baby. America established 1776 Supply Company. Woo! I like it. TheAlexJonesStore.com.
Have you ever been experienced? Well, we have. Let us show you now on The War Room with Harrison Smith.
Welcome back, folks. This is The War Room. I got to tell you, the sale ends tonight if you want to get free CMOS gummies or Shilajit gummies when you buy Ultimate Creatine Powder at TheAlexJonesStore.com. TheAlexJonesStore.com is how we stay on the air and in the fight. As you know, we're going to go through some major changes here momentarily. I think Alex announced on the show today it'd be no later than April 1st if things continue the way they're going. So just know now we need as much capital as we can get because we're about to launch into something brand new and even more powerful, and you can support us in this mission by going to TheAlexJonesStore.com. There's one thing that should be abundantly clear. We ain't going anywhere. We're only going to get bigger, and we're only able to talk about what we talk about because we have your support at TheAlexJonesStore.com. We don't have customers, we don't have advertisers, we don't have people giving us money. It's just you. If we do what you like, I hope you go to TheAlexJonesStore.com. If you don't go there, we go away. And that's what's given us the freedom to discuss all of this stuff as openly and truthfully as we possibly can. And on that note, I'm very happy to welcome my guest, Brandon Weikert. You can follow him on X at WeTheBrandon. His book is called The Shadow War, Iran's Quest for Supremacy. He's a geopolitical analysis and founder of the Weikert Report, World News Done Right, guided by Herman Kahn's motto against fashionable thinking. And again, you can follow him on X at WeTheBrandon. He's one of my favorite followers. Brandon, how are you, sir?
I am trying to survive the so-called golden age. I don't know about you.
Doesn't feel so golden to me, man. It's been a while. It feels like every time we talk, it was always like, all right, is it going to happen? When's it going to happen? It seems like it's going to happen. Well, it's happened, Brandon. It's happened. Yeah. We are now at war with Iran. How are you taking this?
We have always been at war with Iran. This is where we are right now. Basically, to me, I am anticipating ground troops to be deployed within the next several weeks. I don't think the air war is going anywhere near as well as they're claiming. Then again, though, I don't believe anything anymore the government tells me. We've certainly degraded a lot of things in Iran. The Israelis in particular have killed a bunch of their leaders, as you noted at the top of the hour, notably the Ayatollah. But the Ayatollah wasn't important. He was a symbolic head, but he wasn't actually running the regime. Now, we have killed, or the Israelis have killed, a lot of IRGC commanders who were running things. But apparently, a country of 96 million people or so has more people to promote. So, their regime survives. And I'll just say this. There's a mismatch in objectives here. Our objectives are way too many, for one. You've got three objectives here: regime change, ending the nuclear weapons program in Iran, and the ballistic missile systems they want gone. We do. The Iranian goal, they just have to survive. They have to hang on long enough for our air defense interceptors and our offensive missile systems in the CENTCOM area of responsibility, AOR, to be depleted. And according to many reports that I've read and people that I've talked to, former missile defense agency people and whatnot, the report that I'm getting is that before the war began, Trump was told there's only about 8 days worth of stockpiles in the Middle East for a high tempo war of the kind we're currently fighting. We're going into day four. So if those numbers are accurate at all, in the next week, we're going to be running low, and they're going to have to pull stockpiles then from the Indo-PACOM area, which means we're going to be draining our defenses against China to fight Israel. I mean, to fight our war against the Islamic Republic of Iran. And there's no doubt that the Iranians are not our friends. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, this was not a pressing issue. The decision to go to war was not based on any imminent threat. And the Pentagon today in that press conference with Hegseth and General Kane confirmed that there was no intelligence suggesting that they were 2 weeks away from a nuclear breakout.
Or any sort of threat against us, if I remember correctly. How do you even wrap your mind around what's going? Because there's so much conflicting information. AI videos make everything complicated. Yep. Now I'm basically clicking the grok button on every video I see, just going, is this AI? I mean, it's almost automatically have a tag.
I got burned
at this point.
The other day. I posted something that I thought was from Haifa, and then I double checked, and I was like, oh, AI. Yeah.
So there's all that mis and disinformation, and then there's just like what you're seeing. I'm seeing a ton of video of Tel Aviv getting hit and American bases getting hit. My feed doesn't have a lot of Iranian, you know, damage being done to Iran, but I'm seeing that also. It seems to me like things. My just bird's eye view interpretation is, all right, it looks like things are not going as smoothly as maybe they hoped, and it seems like Trump expected this to almost be a repeat of Venezuela, and since it's not. The rumors and sort of the signals are like people in the Pentagon are like, we don't actually know what we're doing here. But then like you got the Tel Aviv stock market reaching extra, you know, the highest it's ever reached. So I'm like, all right, what is the situation? How do you even get a handle on what's real at this point?
Well, at this point, what I would recommend to everybody is the next probably 48 hours are going to be key for determining whether or not Iran is still in the fight truly, or if what we're witnessing is the last gasp of a truly dying regime. I am leaning toward the fact that the Iranians still have some fight in them, although other military experts are telling me that I'm crazy. But to me, I think the Iranians have planned for this very well, and they've been hit hard, but they're still fighting. In terms of what to expect, I actually think that the president thought once he got rid of Khamenei, the Ayatollah, that the whole system would implode and it would be sort of like we could do what we did with Maduro. And I think he is now waking up to the fact that this is not, and I said this to people near the administration, I was warning for weeks, Iran is not Venezuela in any way. And, you know, here we are. The Iranian regime has been under attack for 46 years. They've been attacking us. We've been attacking them. They've been attacking Israel, et cetera. So they have had time to prepare. And so far, their preparations look to be, you know, I wouldn't say perfect. But again, their only objective is regime survival until they think we run out of missiles and air defense interceptors. And that's coming up real soon. And then they can go ham with their own long-range ballistic missiles, which they have thousands of. We're trying to take out their missile cities underground. That's what those B-2 strikes over the weekend were about, with 2,000-pound bombs. I'm not convinced those strikes were successful any more than I wasn't convinced, and I was right, that the strikes against the nuclear facilities last year were effective.
Here's a question for you. What do you think the casualty list really looks like right now? I mean, all we've seen is that four jets were shot down in friendly fire. I mean, as far as I can tell, that's sort of the only confirmed casualties that America is admitting yet. You've got Iran saying, actually, we think hundreds of American servicemen have killed. I can't help but see some of the attacks on the hotels or the bases in Bahrain and go, if anybody was in that building, they're dead. What do you think the casualty list looks like on both sides right now?
I do think we've killed quite a bit of Iranian leaders. I'm sure, and I've seen some battle damage in Tehran. It looks pretty apocalyptic. It looks pretty apocalyptic in parts of Tel Aviv too. I have people that have been sending me things, and they're not allowed to send them, so I can't share them. But I have seen things out of Tel Aviv, even out of parts of Jerusalem that are that look pretty bad for the Israelis. In terms of our casualties, I'm going to just stick, and the only reason I say this is because when you start speculating, you know, then the OSINT crowd comes after you, and you know, then you get smeared as an Iranian apologist or whatever. I'm going to say that the last CENTCOM report I saw about an hour ago today was that six service members have been killed. Many more wounded. I don't remember the number of wounded, but the number is increasing almost, you know, almost geometrically. Now, that's the official narrative. My theory, I'm just sort of speculating here, is I'm wondering if the administration is sort of slow walking the release of real casualty figures because they don't want it to seem like it's this bad. It is very clear to me, having been around Trump, having watched him from afar rise, having been on, you know, multiple events and meeting him and many of his advisors. I know many of his Pentagon advisors very well. I get a sense that they are taken aback by the fact that the Iranians have been able to sustain any kind of operational tempo. And in fact, the Iranians are actually increasing their missile attacks on the region. Now, maybe it all fizzles in 2 days, and that's the hope. Like sort of like the cancer patient gets a burst of energy right before he dies.
Yeah.
But, you know, the Iranians, like I said, have had time to prepare. And I really do think this is, it's already become a regional war, Harrison. I think it's about to become a world war. We've already seen the French are getting involved. The British are now, despite their protestations, they are now engaging in air defense operations with their jets over Oman. This is very much a global conflict. And with the Strait of Hormuz shut down now, this is becoming an oil war as much as anything else.
And the Strait of Hormuz, I want to get into that too, because that's an interesting wrinkle to this because of how much more damaging it is to Europe and China than us to shut down that strait. But obviously, it's going to affect the, you know, oil prices the world over.
Yeah.
Do you have any confirmation one way or the other about strikes on the USS Lincoln? Because this is another rumor I was hearing but cannot confirm to my own satisfaction whether or not it's true.
So I know that the four ballistic missiles are what the official narrative is that were fired after Kamani's death was confirmed at the Abraham Lincoln, the Nimitz-class carrier operating in the North Arabian Sea. The CENTCOM is claiming that it never came within, you know, reach. But we saw during the Houthi battle a year ago or 2 years ago almost, the U.S. carriers are very vulnerable to these anti-ship ballistic missiles. So I'm convinced, and the number that was sent, only four, my assumption on that is I think the Iranians were sending a message more than anything to Washington, D.C. We can really F you up if you really keep at it. Now, an interesting story, and it's been 2 days. I've been trying to get it confirmed. I can't. But there was a missing submarine, Iranian submarine. Now, we've done a very good job of getting knocking out the Iranian Navy. There was one Fatah-class air-independent propulsion-powered diesel-electric submarine that was missing from its home port when we began the attack. The assumption was that she was underway and she was on the prowl. And the reason I say this is even though it's an old system, the AIP is an old system compared to what we've got. For 25 years in NATO war games, European diesel-electric submarines have been able to simulate successfully sinking U.S. carriers because the way that their engines operate, they're quieter and they're harder to detect for the carrier's battle group. And if the carrier had been under sustained anti-ship ballistic missile attack and drone attack at the same time, that Fatah class in theory could have gotten within torpedo range and had a successful shot. Now, what I was told is, and I've not been able to confirm this, but what I was told is that Fatah class submarine did, in fact, around the time those four ballistic missiles were fired at the carrier, did get very near to the carrier, attempted to fire torpedoes at it, but one of our assets was able to detect it and sank it before it could pop off the torpedoes at the carrier. But this is a very hot environment, and I would just remind your audience, for all the rah-rah about the carriers, they are still operating outside the range of many of these Iranian weapons, which indicates to me the Pentagon is very much worried about what kind of capabilities Iran still has.
That's what it seems like to me as well. And of course, again, the base is getting struck so thoroughly, but no reports of casualties make me think that the Americans must have gotten underground or, you know, just gotten out of the range of the missiles before it hit, or they're lying to us about the casualty list. But it's got to be one of those or the other. Man, there's so many places to go with this, Brandon. Where do you want to go with this? Because I can ask about, you know, Russia is making threats now. Just the let me ask you this. Is the confusion in the messaging, do you think that is strictly because the messaging is confused, or do you think that hints to actual confusion in the strategic discussions that are going on. I can't tell whether they just don't have their messaging right, so it looks convoluted, or whether this is, you know, representative of a disordered, you know, set of minds trying to figure this out. Do you have any inclination one way or the other?
I think they are very surprised by how effective the Iranian resistance has been thus far.
Okay.
Again, the Iranians have been hit. They've been hit very hard. And, you know, for the sake of our people, I'm hopeful that we win this thing quickly. But, you know, I have to put my analytical hat on. And, you know, Trump is normally a very savvy media guy. If anything else, he is very good about managing the media. But this has been one of the worst examples of media mismanagement. And I'm just kind of surprised, just given his background and his talent for media management, that this has gone off so badly, the messaging. And the only thing I can think of is he was told and he assumed one thing in terms of an outcome, this being quick like Maduro. And now he's waking up on day four, going into day four, and there's no resolution to this thing, which indicates to me that things are worse than we're realizing. And I also want to point out something to your audience, Harrison. That press conference today with Hegseth and General Kane, they completely, particularly the military, the uniform military, Kane, is clearly trying to distance the Pentagon from this war. Kane has repeatedly come out and said and voiced concern about this operation, or he's done it indirectly through leaks. He has repeatedly now said that, oh, we didn't have intelligence of an imminent threat. Well, that contradicts what the president said last weekend. And then Hegseth himself said this is not a regime change war, but that also completely contradicts what the president said Saturday and again 48 hours ago about this issue. And what that indicates to me, Harrison, is that there's real legal and political concern within the Pentagon, and they are now trying to distance themselves from what they think is going to become a very pear-shaped operation very soon if this continues beyond a week.
Do you know if there's any legitimacy to the claims that Trump wanted a ceasefire and that Iran rejected them?
I believe that is accurate. So what happened was, around the time the attacks or the threats to the carrier began, I was told, and again, this is all hearsay, but I was told that the president became kind of wigged out at the what was going on with the Abraham Lincoln, the carrier, and he immediately called, and basically the Iranians didn't pick up. And the Iranians are not interested in talking. To be fair, we've killed quite a few people in the Iranian leadership, so there might not have been people to talk to. But interestingly, also in his weird late night discourse with Jonathan Carl of ABC, the president apparently said that the leader that we wanted to work with within the Iranian Revolutionary Guard was also killed in the initial strikes. Well, who was doing the initial strikes were the Israelis. Right. The Israelis, this is not widely reported. The first day of strikes were widely done by the Israelis at standoff ranges. We were doing sort of electronic warfare methodology, but it was the Israelis, which indicates to me that the Israelis do not want a stable government forming in the aftermath of whatever happens militarily.
Right. And of course that sort of makes sense with everything else that we've seen so far. And was that, you know, again, a lot of this is speculation. Everything that we're saying now, you know, you sort of have to take with a grain of salt, and hopefully, you know, more clarity will come later. But you know, I think you have better sources than just about anybody else. What
for now? Well, they're going to freeze me out eventually.
That's all right. We'll get you on as much as possible until then. But, I mean, just where does this go from here? What is the goal? I mean, again, I'm just sort of torn because you see Trump and he seems confident and he's like, yeah, this is fine. We're ahead of schedule. And it's like, I don't think we are, dude.
He doesn't seem confident to me, actually. I know a lot of people around him. I've interacted with him. I've followed him for a decade now in politics very closely. He does not seem very confident. He seems defensive at times. You know, he seems almost kind of bored. That's kind of the look on his face, is one of boredom at times and sort of nonchalance, almost like, yeah, I'm having to do this. Like Marco and Susie made me do this.
Right.
So I'm doing this for them and for Netanyahu because, you know, he owes me a lot of money. You know, that's sort of the takeaway I have is that this is not really Trump's grand initiative. I think he's sort of going along with it because he feels he has to. And you know, if it works out, then he gets to say, hey, look at all this, the success I've had. But I think he's waking up to the fact that this thing is not going to be over. You know, now he's talking about 4 to 5 weeks. And to be fair, from the beginning, the administration always said that they're planning for a 4-week war. But, you know, with those stockpile issues, I can't imagine that Trump and his military leaders really thought this would go that long. And furthermore, you know, you look at what's going on with Trump and you say, well, this guy is going to be facing a recession because you mentioned the Strait of Hormuz. It went a 6% price increase today, which is only a few dollars right now. And the markets closed on Friday around $73 per barrel. But now, you know, that's going to now increase and we're going to be inching closer to 80 to 90 barrels dollars per barrel. This thing lasts for 3 weeks. The assessment is in 3 weeks. We will be, if it continues as it is, with the Straits of Hormuz being interdicted the way they are, we will be staring at $120 per barrel minimum oil. And that means that you and I are going to be paying significantly more. And $120 or higher in oil at this time in the economy equals recession right in time for the midterm elections. And if he loses those midterms, he will be impeached no matter what. The Democrats will not drop this, especially because now the Democrats are claiming that Rubio in the last Gang of Eight meeting lied to them and held back intelligence so that he could get a favorable opinion from them on striking Iran. And if that can be proven, then you've got a huge problem on your hand politically and legally for Trump and his team.
I was going to say, I mean, hell, Trump might be impeached, you know, before the midterms by how unpopular this war is being.
Well, I don't think the Republicans are going to do that to him in the Congress. They're pretty simpatico. Plus, they all want this to happen anyway. But once they lose those majorities, Harrison, it's a whole new political reality for us. And the golden age becomes a golden fizzle.
That's true. I just think I think whoever figures out that impeachment, you know, over the Iran war is popular is going to do it. And everybody else is going to jump
on.
It'll
probably Ro Khanna and Thomas Massie. I think the two of them will gang up on that.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised about that. And, you know, part of the whole confusion and convoluted messaging is that Americans don't support this war. We haven't been given a reason to. No. So I mean, I think the latest I saw
was, he didn't even try to lie to us the way George W. Bush did.
That's what I mean. It's like at least give us something to sink our teeth into. But there's like, no, you know, we're just doing it. It is so crazy. And
that's the tell, by the way. He thought it would be quicker than it was.
I think so, too. I think he expected this to be another Venezuela. He thought, oh, all these doubters are whining and crying. But by Monday, they'll see and I'll be able to tout this as a success. And I think he was just lied to. I mean, I have to assume that he's been lied to.
He should fire every single White House national security person. Right now, he needs to clean house like there, and he needs to get rid of Susie, and he needs to probably put Rubio back in Foggy Bottom and get him out of the White House.
Yeah, I mean, this is it is such a disaster, and it's sad because it's entirely of his own making. And then you have satellite images revealing aftermath of drone attack on Saudi Arabia's biggest refinery. So, I mean, it's not just the Strait of Hormuz blocking the flow to oil, mostly to Europe and China. It's going to be our suppliers here as well, and there's no sign of anything slowing down. Again, the fact that he's reported to have asked for a ceasefire and that Iran denied means they at least think it's going well. More with Brandon Weikert on the other side. So much more to get into, folks.
Alert, alert, alert. We're engaged in world-changing information here. The worldwide satanic pedophile networks, the poison shots, depopulation, the classified CIA documents about poisoning the food and water and medicines to make us dumb and more docile and controllable and to make us sick and die. Operation Artichoke fully declassified this week. Total vindication of this broadcast. And now our credibility is higher than ever, but it takes funds to operate. So it's a win-win. I sell you supplements, super nutrient compounds that are the certified best, strongest, highest rated, most loved, totally tested products at thealexjonesstore.com. And we have a massive sale, and that means you have until midnight Monday, March 2nd, to get our incredible, highest quality, concentrated creatine, private label, the top brand in the country. So good for your whole body, so good for your brain, good for everything. And you get a free bottle of Irish Sea Moss gummies. Each gummy is equivalent to like 40 grams or something of Irish Sea Moss. It's so good for you. A bunch of other super nutrients. And our high quality Shilajit. You get either or. You choose. Absolutely free. That's a $35 value. Absolutely free with our creatine. There's also store-wide 25% off all apparel. That ends midnight Wednesday, March 4th. But let me just overhead shot show TV viewers a couple of things right here. KU Medical Center. Creatine shows potential to boost cognition in Alzheimer's patients. Just type in creatine Alzheimer's. Creatine and cognition and aging, a systematic review of evidence in older adults, a major study. HHS Public Access. Effects of creatine supplementation on cognitive function of healthy individuals, systematic review of randomized controlled trials. And it's not just good for your brain, it's good for your heart, your muscles, everything. Everybody always thinks of it for muscles, but it's every organ, folks, and you got to get the right kind of creatine. We have the best. Here's BBC telling the truth. The bodybuilding supplement that boosts brain power. I mean, my God, I was taking creatine in high school. I could bench press 350 pounds, weighed 180 pounds. Squatting 600. My strength just exploded once I got on creatine. But what's it do for your brain? Want bigger gains in your brain? Six facts about creatine and brain health. Get your creatine already discounted. Get a free bottle of Irish Sea Moss and or Shilajit until Monday, March 2nd at midnight. And it funds the operation. Take action now at TheAlexShowStore.com. Plus, 25% off all apparel, t-shirts, hats, and hoodies ends midnight, Wednesday, March 4th. Take advantage of that. We have the widest selection of Patriot apparel and some of the best designs. I set out when our sponsor said, what do you want? I said, I want the widest selection of t-shirts, hoodies, sweaters, hats, you name it. I want classic Americana stuff. I want pro-Trump stuff. I want InfoWars stuff. I want comedy stuff. I want just Americana stuff. Christian, Crusader, pro-life, pro-Jesus, classic 1776 stuff, quality Leering Center, you know, joke stuff, classic InfoWars gear. I mean, just cool shirts saying, I love America with a German pointer on it. I mean, just good stuff. All sorts of resistance to tyrants is obedience to God Punisher shirts. I mean, there are some kick-ass stuff there. Look at that one, American Supply Co. I designed that bad baby. I gave the concept great guys over there and gals. All up in Arkansas, where Big League's based. America established 1776 Supply Company. Woo! I like it. It's got a cool deal on the right-hand shoulder. And there's just, it's over 700 shirts now. That's the only problem, is that you find a shirt, you get it, you like it, you want to buy another one. Takes me like, if you don't remember the name of the shirt, it takes you like an hour to find it. But that's a good problem to have.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
This is The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. My guest is Brandon J. Weikert. You can follow him at WeTheBrandon on X. He's the founder of the Weikert Report News, World News Done Right. And again, you can follow him at WeTheBrandon, and I encourage you to do so. Brandon, I'm not sure if you've seen this, but Secretary Rubio, a little less than an hour ago, made a statement about Israel and America and who decided to attack first, I'd love to go to this clip and get your response to it. Here's Marco Rubio less than an hour ago. Brandon Weikert commenting on the other side. Let's watch.
The United States conducted this operation with a very clear goal in mind. I haven't got a chance to see a lot of reporting. I don't understand what the confusion is. Let me explain it to you, and I'll do it once again as clearly as possible. Perhaps you'll report it that way. The United States is conducting an operation to eliminate the threat of Iran's short-range ballistic missiles and the threat posed by their Navy, particularly to naval assets. That is what it is focused on doing right now, and it's doing quite successfully. I'll leave it to the Pentagon and the Department of War to discuss the tactics behind that and the progress that's being made. That is the clear objective of this mission. The second question that's been asked is, why now? Well, there's two reasons why now. The first is it was abundantly clear that if Iran came under attack by anyone, the United States or Israel or anyone, they were going to respond and respond against the United States. The orders had been delegated down to the field commanders. It was automatic, and in fact, it bared to be true, because in fact, within an hour of the initial attack on the leadership compound, the missile forces in the south and in the north, for that matter, had already been activated to launch. In fact, those had already been pre-positioned. The third is the assessment that was made that if we stood and waited for that attack to come first before we hit them, we would suffer much higher casualties. And so the president made the very wise decision. We knew that there was going to be an Israeli action. We knew that that would precipitate an attack against American forces. And we knew that if we didn't preemptively go after them before they launched those attacks, we would suffer higher casualties and perhaps even higher those killed. And then we would all be here answering questions about why we knew that and didn't act.
Whoa, okay. That was Secretary of State Marco Rubio essentially admitting that we had to attack because Israel attacked, and if Israel attacks, Iran's going to attack us. That was kind of mind-blowing. Is that the message you just got? I feel like I just heard Secretary Rubio blame this on Israel.
Yeah, well, but like I said, they're all scrambling now. This is how you know. They're all in CYA mode. You know, I remember living and working in D.C. well. I can tell when they're flailing. I have advised people when they're in this position, and this is exactly what you do. He is blame shifting. He is he also said something very interesting. He's in a way, he's admitting now that it was a preemptive war. Well, I can guarantee you, again, if the Democrats take over, this is going to be the mother of all congressional investigations now. And I hope he's got a good attorney, because this thing is going to be an ever-widening investigation into the intelligence behind the war. And I don't believe for a second that this was a preemptive strike at all. I think that is a bold-faced lie. Now, what you're saying about the Israelis is very interesting, because as I said, at the first day, the attack was conducted predominantly by the Israelis, but the United States provided critical electronic warfare assistance. We provided intelligence. We provided targeting intelligence to the Israelis. And furthermore, we deployed a picket of F-22 Raptors from one of our Middle East bases, and they provided suppression of enemy air defenses, SEED capabilities for the Israeli systems that were being deployed against Iran on that first day. So he can say what he wants about, oh, the Israelis initiated, and they probably did. But this was done in very close coordination with the administration. This was executed according to a pre-designed plan. And now what they're doing is they're trying to blame shift, because I think Rubio, who's very savvy politically, understands, as does Hegseth and Kane and the rest of them, that this thing's going breasts up very quickly, and they need to have cover stories, and they need to have deflection narratives. Because if it is allowed to fester and the Democrats do take power, Harrison, these guys are cooked. There will be impeachments. There will be investigations that will basically end their political careers right now.
I mean, this is sort of uncharted water as far as the American regime is concerned, the American government is concerned, because, I mean, to blame Israel like that, like, it seems like this could almost lead to, you know, the American people demanding that we not be allies with Israel anymore. If we just, I mean, again, I'm walking away with this, having just heard Marco Rubio basically say Israel attacked, and so we had to. So, I mean, this is has been such a disaster so far of messaging and everything. If it gets worse, it sounds like he's laying the blame at the feet of the Israelis, and that would
be. He is.
So,
he is.
I mean, this could open up the door to actually...
I had a source tell me about that school strike, by the way, and this is all starting to make sense now. I had a source tell me from the Pentagon, insist to me, that the school that was destroyed in Iran was not done by U.S. bombs. It was done by Israel. Mm. And so now, of course, I have no way of confirming that. This is all sort of, you know, background. But there definitely seems to be narrative building here. Again, this strike doesn't happen. Yes, the Israelis probably went first. This strike doesn't happen without very close-in support and intelligence sharing from us. So the notion that, oh, America didn't have anything to do with it, we were just kind of dragged along, I don't buy that for a second. This was determined.
I don't buy it either. It's just the fact that they would even hinted that. Because that's the interesting part, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, clearly, this is not going as well as they thought it would. And, you know, maybe they can pull it out of the fire. Maybe the Iranians are more wounded than we're realizing. You know, we'll find out, like I said, in 48 hours. That's going to be the real key window. But for now, clearly, it's not going well. They can't get their story straight. People don't remember the Friday. So 3:38 p.m. last Friday was supposedly when Kane received the order to initiate airstrikes for that Saturday. What happened around that time was the leak from Vice Admiral Fred Kocher, who was the director of the joint staff for the joint joint chiefs of staff. Basically, he was an underling of Kane, and he leaked to the press this very contentious meeting that Kane had with Trump, right, in which Kane basically outlined all the reasons you should not attack Iran the way you're planning to, Mr. President. Trump didn't listen, and so shortly after, Kocher released that information in a leak. Now, the big question in the Pentagon has been, was this Kocher acting on his own, or was he doing it because Kane asked him to do it? And I believe Kane asked him to do it, which means you have within the military, uniform military, there is a very deep aversion to what the president is ordering them to do, because they understand the logistics. They understand the supply chain. They understand the weaknesses in the defense industrial base. And the president, for whatever reason, is just deadlocked on this Iran war. And he's locked in harder, I think, even than George W. Bush was on Iraq.
Truly. I mean, you talk about uncharted territory. It's like everything about this has been this way for a while. I mean, obviously, I think this is tied up in the Epstein stuff as well. And that's another example of just like what is happening. How did everybody switch sides all of a sudden? It's also baffling. And like,
it's a big club and we're not in it.
Apparently not. but like, this is another headline that I'm just like, what world are we in? How did things go so wrong so bad? So fast. Yeah. UAE and Qatar urge allies to help Trump find off-ramp to in Iran. So is this from Bloomberg? Yeah, so Bloomberg has this story. The United Arab Emirates and Qatar are privately lobbying allies to help them persuade Donald Trump to reach for an off-ramp that would keep U.S. military operations against Iran short, according to people familiar with the matter. So again, we're like 72 hours into this conflict, and apparently our allies are like, please, how do we get Trump to stop? Crazy.
I like to think of Trump and Netanyahu as like Thelma and Louise going in the car, holding hands off the cliff, everybody screaming at them, please stop.
Only we're all tied to their back bumper. That's the issue.
That's right. Kurt Mills is texting me saying calamity is building. So, I mean, I'm sure something just happened that's horrific because the golden age never stops. But no, the Middle East is the tragedy here is that last year Donald Trump went to the Middle East and he effected an incredible geoeconomic coup in which he basically, there we go. You got a great team there.
Yep.
In which he basically effected a geoeconomic coup, and he empowered the Arab states to stand up in closer trade relations with the United States on things like AI and advanced manufacturing. It's hard to believe a year ago this is the same president, because that was the famous Riyadh speech he gave last year in which he said commerce over conflict.
Yeah, that was an amazing speech.
It was. And now here we are a year later, and he's basically shredded that. And he is now all in on the Israeli Greater Project or Greater Israel Project. And, you know, this thing is going to bleed America dry. We're going to lose those stockpiles. And if you note, Harrison, the geopolitical impact of this that's not being widely reported, we are phasing our presence out of these Arab states because of the threat.
Right.
So for those Arab states who are dependent on the U.S. having some presence or foothold in their country for security purposes, well, no matter what, we're pulling out because we can't protect our bases anymore. So this is a sea change. Even if we, quote, win in Iran, which I'm hopeful we do because I'm pro-America, but even if we do, the geopolitical landscape in the region is going to be so fundamentally different. It will be wide open for the Chinese and Russians to come in and scoop up that part of the world. And you know what? They can have it. But ultimately, this is one of the most thoughtless endeavors I have ever seen. I've never seen the country this blasé about a major war.
It really defies explanation. Like, it is. And you know, part of me is like, I don't know, grasping for straws and going, maybe this is the only way to get out of the Middle East for America. Maybe, you
well,
know.
That would be the silver lining. That would be the silver lining.
The silver light, yeah, whether intentional or not, it's kind of like, you know, when I saw it was like, you know, USS Abraham Lincoln, you know, leaves the area after getting hit by missiles. I'm like, good, we should leave. Yes, we should leave immediately. Right. Now is the time to go,
things are
a little hot around here. We're going to step off for a little bit.
You're it.
that would be great. Just go, it's going to settle down. We'll be back in a few years. You guys handle this. The Gulf countries, again, they're having sort of a weird response. I don't know if you want to get into that. And then the proxies as well. But Gulf countries first. What is their response to being attacked?
Well, you have to understand, the Gulf countries, contrary to what Israel says about these Gulf countries, they are totally in bed with the United States and Israel. In fact, Saudi Arabia might have been working with Israel on 9/11. Anyway, though, I don't want to get into that here. You know, they're totally in bed with the U.S. and Israel. So this notion that these governments are hostile to Israel is ridiculous. They are not. But the people are different from their government. And the people are irate at the United States now because, hey, their economy is their lifeblood, and it's being annihilated by these Iranian missiles. Whether the Iranians are going away or not is irrelevant to the average, you know, person in Qatar or Bahrain and the thing about Bahrain is they're overwhelmingly Shiite Muslims.
Right.
So you would think that they're everybody's angry at us. Because their entire economic model is being destroyed by our foreign policy, and this is going to destabilize the region for years. And if this conflict continues, you might see the fall of Arab regimes that are close to the United States. And remember, a lot of these populations are Islamist, so they might get replaced by Al-Qaeda types.
Right. Right. Absolutely. I mean, it's just so these are sirens. So I mean, it's still going on to a massive degree. I thought maybe that they had just bombed Cyprus. This happened a little while ago, but
that was what they threatened. They threatened to do it this morning. They might have actually done it.
I think they did. Europe very likely to get dragged into conflict after UK base in Cyprus hit. So apparently they're blaming Hezbollah for hitting the base in Cyprus, because basically American armaments went to stage in Cyprus, and so Iran
said,
"We'll find you there."
We had to flee. I mean, this is the unsung story here, is we've had to flee from the region. Operating out of Cyprus is not a normal thing for the U.S. military and the CENTCOM AOR. This is a completely, it's because we are having to withdraw and create a fortress for ourselves out of over the horizon, and it's not enough, obviously. So that indicates to me that the Iranians have still got quite a lot of fight in them, and it's probably why Rubio is flailing, you know, on the steps of Capitol Hill. That's probably why the Hegseth and Kane are, you know, countermanding what the president is saying in public. And the president seems kind of ambivalent to the whole event. This is a very big crisis, and it's going to blow up very soon into what I think will be the, I mean, in my book, The Shadow War, I said a war with Iran will initiate a world war.
Right.
And it looks like we are on the track for that. And I don't see any off ramp here. You know, the Iranians are fanatics anyway, that regime. So you're putting a fanatic in a corner. It's probably not the best place to put him. A very well-armed fanatic. Right, exactly. You know, and then they seal off the Strait of Hormuz. You've got the Houthis sealing off the Strait of Bab el-Mandeb. You've got the Houthis going after the Red Sea. You've talked about targeting those refineries. Who knows who did it? But the end result is this is creating so much volatility in the global oil market that it's going to spike the price. And if this continues over the long run, which I suspect it will spike the price severely and possibly lead to a recession here in the United States. Meanwhile, in China, now China is very important here because we are told by the administration's, you know, apologists that, this is great. Venezuela was an oil source for China, and so is Iran, and we're taking away their oil sources, and it's going to be the end of their economy. Well, to be clear, China only got around 4% of their oil from Venezuela. They got about 14 to 15% of their oil from Iran. However, in the last several weeks, the Chinese had started shifting their purchases of energy products from Iran to Russia, Saudi Arabia, and I believe Qatar. And in fact, in the last 3 weeks, the largest amount of Chinese purchases of Saudi oil, probably in a year, were conducted because they knew this strike was coming on Iran and they'd be cut off. So the Chinese, like the Iranians, have been, and like the Russians, have been hardening their regime and their economy to maybe not prosper during this time, but certainly to survive. Hmm. And survival for these regimes is key, because then they can rebuild from there. And they know they can outlast the Americans, because we have a very short attention span and clearly a short logistics tail.
Yeah, and so that's interesting. So, because the latest I'd heard, or I was just using AI to research, and it was saying like 50% of China's oil resources. And that may have been a particular type of oil that they got
from
Iran.
It might be talking generally about the Middle East, because they get a lot of stuff from the Middle East. And I don't know what the combined percentage is. It's not just Iran. It's Saudi Arabia. It's Qatar. I think there's another Middle East country they get it from. But remember, I would say 70 to 80% of their oil comes from next door in Russia.
Right.
And, you know, that's a huge stopgap. And now that the Indians are no longer directly purchasing the extra Russian oil because of America's pressure on India, well, the Russians are just transshipping that oil that was bound for India, and they're just dumping it off in China. And the Chinese are very happy to have that. And
yes. So, like the Zero Hedge article hints, you know, this was one of the things people are speculating about, going, well, this may look bad, but it's hurting China the most, and this is all about going after China. But you're saying that China was pretty aware of this, and it's not really hurting them as much as it would be.
I mean, it probably is hurting them. I'm not going to say they're not being hurt, but I don't think this is the collapse.
Right.
So there is this collapse narrative that has really been kicking around for 25 years in Washington, D.C., and these sort of empty heads of the think tank crew. They've been consistently wrong. China's not going to collapse. They're the second largest economy GDP wise. They're the first largest economy in purchasing power parity. They are integrated fully into the world economy in the ways that the Soviet Union never was during the Cold War. Furthermore, they are the world's sweatshop turned world's high-end workshop. So, you know, there is no future in which China collapses anytime soon. And if it did, it's going to take us down with it.
Yeah, well, it's also the world's medicine chest and, you know, glyphosate producer. So, I mean, it's...
And we get a lot of our arms, by the way. The Raytheon CEO during the Biden administration said it's insane to pick a fight with a country like China because 67% of our supply chain comes out of China.
Oh, the blessings of globalism, Brandon.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. Yeah. So here's two quick excerpts that just fulfill everything you're talking about. For Max Blumenthal, he posted the Washington Post saying the mood inside the Pentagon is, quote, intense and paranoid. Pentagon leaders worry the U.S. will expend its air stockpiles and the conflict will, quote, spiral out of control. This is precisely what Pentagon Joint Chief Chair Dan Kane warned of last week, as you talked about. And then there's this CSIS munitions expert Seth Jones says the reality is neither Israel nor the United States have sufficient munitions, either offensive or defensive, for a war that really lasts weeks into months. So, I mean, again, I don't think the leaders of America
that it's
don't
okay
know
to
this,
say
right?
this. Yeah, they must have gotten word, because Seth Jones and those guys used to mock me when I would write about this. So all these official mouthpieces must. I saw Stavridis, Admiral Stavridis was saying this morning in the Wall Street, or I think of New York Post or New York Times or something. So obviously the word has gone out from the deep state. Hey, let everybody know it's a crisis, because they're going to use this to stab the knife in Trump's back and take him down like they've always wanted to. So he's really fallen in to the worst possible trap imaginable politically, legally, and strategically so far.
Man, you know, I hate to just constantly, talk about...
They don't call me Dr. Doom for nothing.
Well, I just... it sounds accurate, and it's like, I cannot help but think of this like the King Theoden situation in Lord of the Rings. Like, I know it's like cheesy, but I mean, but that's how I feel. Is it's like, I don't hate Trump, but the dude is not there.
Right.
There's something else.
Tolkien is never cheesy, by the way. He's always relevant. So
well,
ask my daughters. I drive them crazy with this. So,
but I mean, just in thinking about what Trump is doing right now, I can't believe that he's just going off and just like, screw it. We're going to waste all of our munitions and who cares if I get impeached? Like, I don't think he's that way, but he's clearly being fed misinformation.
Well, Trump also has a very... Trump has like a 1950s view of America. And somebody who knew him in the 80s, I'm close with, he's an old timer, but, you know, he explained to me that, you know, from Trump's perspective, you know, he was paying attention to things in the 50s and then, you know, in the 60s, and then he goes into the professional world and his whole world is not politics. It's not military. So for him, what he knows about the military and sort of American power and strength was forged in his teenage years, really, when he was a military academy student at that military academy in upstate New York. Right. And then he comes out of making all this money for 40 plus years and being famous and doing God knows what on the Epstein Island or with the Epstein, whatever. But he comes out of it, and to him, that America is still the America that it's just kind of being mismanaged. And this is his story in 2016. But now he still maintains that sort of 1950s, 1960s view of American military power. And that power has faded after many years of mismanagement by the Democrats and by the neoconservatives on the right. And he hasn't quite figured that out. You know, he said it a lot in 2016, but I don't think he ever fully internalized what his criticism meant and how you have to then, if you believe those criticisms, how you have to react. And so he still thinks, yeah, we'll drain the stockpiles, but we can get them back up. And right. It's like, no, we can't get them back up. In fact, we've been trying to get them back up since 2022. Thank you, Mr. Zelensky. Yeah. And we the best we've been able to do is build a few hundred Tomahawk cruise missiles when we really need hundreds and hundreds and hundreds more.
Yeah, I think you're right, and it's such a shame. And it seems like he's willing to believe people that will feed him that line of, oh, we're America, we'll just do it, just trust me, give me control, and I'll just get it done. He's like, yeah, hell yeah, we'll just do that, which is again extremely dangerous. In the final minute here, we've talked a little bit about China, but overall, bird's eye view, are they going to come out hurt from this or doing better? Do you think?
Well, they're gonna in the near term, yeah, it's gonna hurt them. But just like the purges last month of those high end military leaders, it's not gonna take down the regime. The regime is hardening. The regime is preparing for what I think is going to be a world war. And the regime is hunkering down. And these are the processes you see of a hunkering down regime. Doesn't mean they're going to be as rich and as prosperous as they were the last 10 or 15 years. Probably not. But the idiots in Washington who always get it wrong and yet always get promoted are going to use those as signals to say, yeah, China's collapsing and we're on the ascendancy. I wish that were the case. I truly do. China's not going anywhere anytime soon. They are preparing for a very significant geopolitical event. And I think that geopolitical event in the form of a world war is coming very, very soon. Not a golden age, a world war.
Yeah. Well, in hell, if I was China, I would just look at America and go, we don't have to do anything. Let's just chill for 20 years and then we'll be on top just as a
by 2050, they will be the number one power. There's no doubt in my mind at this point. And by 2075, if things keep going at it, we'll be the number three power behind India and China.
And maybe Israel, once they become the hegemonical power. Unbelievable. Brandon Weikert, incredible stuff. Thank you so much. Follow him at WeTheBrandon.
Thank you, sir.
Incredible,
and
as always.
And Emerald.tv.
We're engaged in world-changing information here. And now our credibility is higher than ever, but it takes funds to operate. So it's a win-win. I sell you supplements, super nutrient compounds that are the certified, best, strongest, highest rated, most loved, totally tested products at thealexjonesstore.com. And we have a massive sale. Alert, alert, alert. I'm saying this live on air Thursday, February 26th. And that means you have until midnight Monday, March 2nd, to get our incredible, highest quality, concentrated creatine, private label, the top brand in the country. So good for your whole body, so good for your brain, good for everything. And you get a free bottle of Irish Sea Moss gummies and our high quality Shilajit. You get either or. You choose, absolutely free with our creatine. The Alex Jones Store. We have the widest selection of Patriot apparel and some of the best designs. I set out when our sponsor said, what do you want? I said, with the widest selection of t-shirts, hoodies, sweaters, hats, you name it. I want classic Americana stuff. I want pro-Trump stuff. I want InfoWars stuff. I want comedy stuff. Christian, Crusader, pro-life, pro-Jesus, classic 1776 stuff, quality Leering Center, you know, joke stuff, classic InfoWars gear. It's all there. I mean, just cool shirts saying, I love America with a German pointer on it. I mean, just good stuff. All sorts of resistance to tyrants is obedience to God Punisher shirts. I mean, there are some kick-ass stuff there. Look at that one, American Supply Co. I designed that bad baby. America established 1776 Supply Company. Woo! I like it. TheAlexJonesStore.com.
Receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.